Hello and welcome to the Otter Podcast. I'm your host, Madison Page, and today we are earning our sea legs on a ship surrounded by mystery and fraught with bad luck. We are unfastening the sails, checking the maps, and hoping and praying that we do not become another missing life in the roster of the famed Mary Celeste. I hope nobody gets seasick. Strap in and let's go! Good morning, midnight, and moon, my otters. How is everyone doing today? I hope we had a fun and relaxing couple of weeks. But what about that last episode? How frustrated do you feel with the police? How afraid are you to follow a handsome man home? Do you know that there are about 2,000 active serial killers in the US at any time? Yeah. Makes you want to take a second look at that Tinder match, doesn't it? I hope you all enjoyed the episode, and if you really enjoyed it, or if you didn't, please leave a rating or review. They really do help. For the returning listeners, welcome back. And for the new listeners, welcome to the Otter Podcast, where we are a trail mix of all things unknown, unsolved, and just plain odd. If you have a subject you've been itching to hear about, fantastic news, I do requested episodes. So if you want me to do a deep dive into a subject of your choosing, send me an email at theotterpod@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you and know what you want to hear from me. Today we are delving into a tasty treat for those who love both unsolved mysteries and the deep blue sea as we talk about the famous Mary Celeste, a ship found floating out to sea without any crew and no clue as to what happened to them. This strange occurrence would draw the attention of many theorists over the years, and we will be picking through all of them. So without further ado, let's take a leisurely swim back to 1872, where the Canadian brigantine De Gratia will come across a ghost in the fog. December 4th was a foggy morning when Captain David Morehouse went about his usual routine. He was captain of the De Gratia, which name literally translates to by the grace of God. It was certainly grace as well as experience and intelligence that made Captain Morehouse successful and respected as he was. On that particular morning, the ship was headed to Genoa via Gibraltar with a load of petroleum when the helmsman flagged down the captain to warn of a vessel spotted about 6 miles from the De Gratia. While this might have raised little alarm in most circumstances, the helmsman warned of a ship sailing erratically with an odd set to her sails. As the strange ship continued its approach, Captain Morehouse took out his eyeglass and noted that he couldn't make out anybody on the deck. He attempted to signal to its crew, but received no reply. Feeling unnerved by the vessel and the lack of crew, Captain Morehouse ordered his first mate Oliver Duveau and second mate John Wright, along with crew member John Johnson, in a ship's boat to board the strange vessel and determine if it was in need of aid. The small boat rowed up to the stern and found the name of the ship carved into its side. Its name was the Mary Celeste. This was a startle to the crew, for you see, they knew of the Mary Celeste and her captain. In fact, it was possible Captain Morehouse had even dined with him the evening before they all watched the ship and its expensive cargo leave New York a mere 2 months ago. Climbing aboard, they found an even eerier scene. Leaving Johnson to hold the boat, Duveau and Wright climbed aboard. They found the deck was empty but in decent shape. It was clear the ship had recently undergone repairs, and aside from a sail torn down and a broken line, all else appeared in order. The men noted the single lifeboat was missing, and several hatches on the ship had been left open. Going below, there appeared to be about 3.5 feet of water in the hold. This amount may sound extreme to us, but to an experienced sailor, this would not have spelled disaster, and the men confirmed the pumps, which would have been used to remove the water, were in working condition. A sounding rod, an item used to measure the depth of water, was also found nearby. They entered the crew quarters and found the ship's daily log in the first mate's cabin. Its final entry was dated November 25th at 8 a.m., 9 days before it was found abandoned and floating. It recorded the ship had been off of the Santa Maria Island. That was nearly 400 nautical miles away from its current position. The two men continued on and discovered the cabin's interiors were soaking wet, but this was likely due to the hatches, skylights, and doors that had been left open, letting in the rain from the recent bad weather. The most disturbing thing was that all of the crew's personal belongings had been left behind. smoking pipes packed with tobacco, children's toys, ladies' clothing, and even a small sword tucked beneath the captain's bed gave the men goosebumps. Everything had been left as though the occupants would be right back. The beds were unmade, and some still held the imprint of those who had slept there. The outline of a small child was even apparent on a bunk in the captain's quarters. In the galley, provisions were fully stocked, waiting for the next meal to be made. The only thing that appeared to be missing from the ship was its lifeboat, some nautical instruments, and the captain and crew. It was all as if they had simply vanished. But with no signs of fire or violence, why had they? What could have happened to make a capable captain, his experienced crew, and even the family he had made special arrangements for to join him suddenly leave? Let's go back to meet the victims. Before the De Gratia found this specter, we go back to April 24, 1835, when Benjamin Briggs would be born in Wareham, Massachusetts. One of the five sons of Captain Nathan Briggs, Benjamin was practically born with the salt of the sea in his blood. He was noted to be very devout as a child, and this would follow him into adulthood. In 1862, he married his cousin. Yes, I know, his cousin, stay with me on this. Sarah Elizabeth Cobb. And the couple enjoyed their honeymoon on Benjamin's own schooner, the Forest King. The couple would go on to have two children, Arthur in 1865 and Sophia Matilda in 1870. By the time his daughter was born, Briggs had achieved recognition in his profession as a captain. Following in the footsteps of his father, he commanded ships carrying cargo from port to port. As the years dragged on, though, he eventually considered retiring, but decided at the last minute to instead invest all his savings into the reconstruction of a heavily abused ship, who he would take over as captain. The ship was the Mary Celeste. When the Mary Celeste was discovered floating in that fog, it was supposed to contain the lives of Captain Briggs, his wife Sarah, his two-year-old daughter Sophia, seven crew members, and a ship cat who Sophia called Poo-a-Poo. It contained no one. When Captain Briggs took over control of the Mary Celeste in October 1872, he set out for her first voyage following her rebuild to Genoa, Italy, where he would deliver a haul of expensive alcohol. He had tried to bring his entire family, but his son Arthur was involved in school, and at the last minute it was decided best to leave him behind to his studies in the care of his grandmother. Captain Briggs was experienced, and his crew was carefully hand-picked. His first mate was Albert G. Richardson, who was married to a niece of James H. Winchester. Winchester was the actual owner of the ship. This was not merely a case of sea-level nepotism, as Richardson had sailed under Briggs before and he trusted him. His second mate, Andrew Gilling, was born in New York and was of Danish descent. He was only 25 when the voyage began. Winchester would also recommend the steward, a newly married Edward William Head. The four general seamen were Germans from the Frisian Islands. The brothers Volkhardt and Bas Lorenzen, Arian Martens, and Gottlieb Gutschall. The four men were described as peaceable and first-class sailors. In a letter to his mother shortly before the voyage, Briggs declared himself eminently satisfied with the ship and crew. Even Sarah would write that the crew seemed quite capable. On November 3, 1872, Briggs, his family, and his crew departed from Pier 50 in New York City, but the weather was uncertain and the ship ended up anchored in Staten Island. The reprieve allowed Sarah to send a final letter to her son promising to bring back exciting tales from the sea. 2 days later, the Mary Celeste would leave Staten Island and head for the Atlantic. Those aboard would never be seen again. When DeVoe and Wright returned to the dinghy and rowed back to their ship, they reported their findings to Captain Morehouse, who felt increasingly wary of the strange circumstances. While it is uncertain how close Morehouse and Briggs would have been, given that the two men shared several common interests, it was likely that at very least, they knew each other socially. Captain Morehouse's widow would later claim that the two ate dinner together the night before the Mary Celeste departed, but this would remain unverified. Captain Morehouse was suddenly struck with an even bigger dilemma. His crew expressed interest in salvaging the ship. Marine salvage is the process of recovering a ship and its cargo after it has been shipwrecked, abandoned, or experienced some other casualty. This involves either trussing the wrecked ship up with tow lines to drag behind the vessel or sending crew over to sail it alongside a lead ship. Maritime law stipulates that the salvager receive a percentage of the worth of the vessel and cargo recovered. Remember that the ship was carrying over 1,700 barrels of expensive alcohol, and DeVoe and Wright had already concluded that the cargo was well and intact. If they brought the Mary Celeste to Gibraltar with them, they envisioned compensation of over $10,000 in today's currency for each man. Captain Morehouse was reluctant. Not only was salvaging a ship a dangerous task, but the whole incident gave him the willies. However, he eventually gave in and sent over DeVoe and a few of the crew to man the vessel. This left the De Gratia undercrewed, and their push to their destination was slow, but they were blessed by good weather and arrived in Gibraltar on December 12th. They immediately handed the ship over to the Vice Admiralty Court for salvage and prepared for their just reward. However, they would instead need to prepare for accusation, trial, and a perilous legal fight. Now, it is nobody's favorite task to have to go to court and defend yourself, even less so when you are defending yourself against someone once quoted as a man whose arrogance and pomposity were inversely proportionate to his IQ. But that was where Captain Morehouse found himself when he was brought before the court against Frederick Sully Flood, the Attorney General of Gibraltar. Flood did not believe the stories Captain Morehouse and his crew had told him of finding the ship abandoned. He became convinced, as honestly many did, that the disappearance of Captain Briggs and crew must have been the result of foul play. On December 23rd, Flood ordered the Mary Celeste be run over with a fine-tooth comb. In this inspection, cuts on both sides of the bow were discovered as though it had been struck by a sharp instrument. The previously mentioned sword found in the captain's quarters was also reported to have blood on it. The report also showed that the ship showed no signs of being hit by heavy weather, which would have thrown the crew overboard, nor did its hull show any signs of a possible collision or being run aground. However, they did find what they believed to be spots of blood on the ship's rails, as well as a deep mark that they surmised could have been caused by an axe. All of this was enough to convince Flood he was right, and on January 22nd, he sent a report to the Board of Trade in London stating he believed that the crew broke into the cargo, became drunk on the alcohol, murdered the Briggs family, threw their bodies overboard before escaping on the lifeboat to an unknown fate. Flood also pointed a gaze of suspicion at the crew of the De Gratia. He felt that there was no way the ship could have floated so far off course and that they must have doctored the records. He proposed that De Gratia had captured the vessel, murdered the captain and crew, in order to claim the ship's salvage reward. However, in strenuous hearings, Captain Morehouse defended himself and his crew, and even spoke of his reluctance to try to salvage the vessel. It was also revealed that the De Gratia left port 8 days later than the Mary Celeste, and would not have been able to easily catch up and overpower the vessel due to it being a slower ship. While this was all going on, James Winchester, the owner of the Mary Celeste, arrived in Gibraltar. You see, the ship and its cargo was still expected, and there would be no pay if it was not released. However, Flood refused to release it without a payment of $15,000, which Winchester did not have. Flood then turned an accusing finger on Winchester himself, saying he hired a murderous crew to kill Briggs purposefully. However, Winchester staunchly denied these claims. He thought highly of Briggs, and killing him benefited him in no way, especially as the cargo and the ship were now being held hostage and so was his wallet. Winchester went on to further say that a captain of Briggs's caliber would never willfully abandon the ship unless there was no other choice. It seemed anyone who stood downwind of Flood was at risk of an accusation. Flood's accusations would take a major blow when scientific analysis of the stains found on the railing and sword would show not to be blood, but rust. Horatio Sprague, an American consul in Gibraltar, would also commission a report of the ship from Captain Sheffield of the U.S. Navy. He would return that the sharp blows to the bow were not the work of a sword or axe, but instead natural wear and tear from the sea. With his theories crumbling, Flood had no choice but to give up. The Mary Celeste was released, and a Captain George Blatchford from Massachusetts would take over her helm to complete her delivery. As for the salvage reward, the men of the De Gratia would be in for a disappointment, as they would only receive around $2,119 total, which was only about one-fifth of the total value of the ship and cargo. This amount was decided following strict disapproval of Captain Morehouse's choices to stay behind in Gibraltar while his crew continued on to Genoa to deliver their petroleum. So what happened to Captain Briggs and his crew? Unfortunately, we have no definitive answer, but we do have several theories. Theory 1. The crew broke into the alcohol supply, either on their own or on Winchester's orders, became drunk, and killed the captain and his family before fleeing in a lifeboat. Foul play is an increasingly common suspected theory, and as the ship was carrying alcohol, it is easy to see why Flood developed this scenario first. However, the devil really is in the details. When I say the ship was carrying alcohol, you probably envisioned casks of rum, whiskey, or wine, but in reality, it was industrial alcohol. If the crew had broken in and drank it, they wouldn't have died, not mutinied. As for a conspiracy by Winchester to kill the captain and his family, this ignores several points. The entire crew disappeared, and the ship was left abandoned, floating for days. What would Winchester or the crew gain from this? Winchester still had to hire a new captain and pay a new crew to eventually deliver the promised goods. He almost had to pay an exorbitant fee to even get the ship back. Not to mention there were no signs of struggle or bloodshed on board, and if the crew did kill the captain and escape, where did they go? Why would they have left all their valuables behind? Theory 2. It was an inside job. Several theories involving Briggs as the main culprit have also cropped up. Historian John Gilbert Lockhart published a book in 1925 in which he claims that Briggs slaughtered his family and crew in a bout of religious mania and then killed himself. While Briggs was very devout, the lack of any sign of struggle negates this theory. Lockhart would later issue an apology to the descendants of Briggs and withdraw this theory from the later editions of his book. Some have suggested that Briggs and Morehouse conspired together to make it appear as though something had happened and split the salvage reward. However, many point out that if this was the case, they would have chosen something easier to explain than just making it appear as though the crew evaporated. Also, Briggs and Sarah left behind their son, Arthur. What amount would be worth never seeing your child again? Theory 3. Pirates. Now, it's easy to imagine the ship was attacked by pirates who killed the captain and crew and then abandoned the ship. While pirates were still active in the 1870s, attacks had been dwindling and they were not as common anymore. Also, we again run into the problem that the cargo and valuables were left behind. If the pirates attacked the ship somehow without causing any damage or leaving behind any sign they were there, and they killed everybody without spilling any blood, why would they then just leave? The alcohol was expensive, there was also other small items of value, but nothing was touched, thus putting an end to this theory. Theory number 4. Mother Nature. The most generally agreed upon scenario is something to do with Mother Nature. Something that caused such alarm with the crew, they all agreed to quickly abandon the ship. DeVoe, the first mate of the DeGratia, had his own theory that Briggs may have become frightened by the amount of water in the hull. Although it was not enough to alarm most sailors, if a false reading was taken using the abandoned sounding rod, he may have been under the impression that the ship was rapidly sinking. The ship could also have been struck by a waterspout, which is a natural phenomenon where a quote-unquote water tornado suddenly forms in a vertical column over a body of water. I know you're probably like, a water tornado equals hurricane. It's not, it's a separate phenomena. I'll post a picture of one on our social media because honestly, the thing looks wicked cool. But anyway, if the ship was struck by one, it may explain the state of the rigging and the sails. The pressure would also have caused water to shoot up into the pumps, which may have appeared as though the ship was filling up rapidly. Icebergs, fears of running aground, and even submarine earthquakes have also been offered as reasons the crew may decide that hopping the ship quickly became the best option. While the possibility of an iceberg being so far south is negligible, it also did not become a theory until after the Titanic happened. An earthquake is a possibility, though. If an earthquake shook the hull enough to damage some of the containers of alcohol, the fumes would have been released. These fumes are toxic and can cause symptoms from stomach cramps to nausea to severe headaches. Briggs might have abandoned ship in fear of the gases causing an explosion. A likely scenario calls for the seepage of alcohol in some manner, resulting in the release of fumes. As the crew is affected, Briggs orders all the hatches and skylights open to air out the ship. However, fearing explosion or just the risk of the fumes on his 2-year-old daughter, Briggs may have ordered evacuation until the ship could air. Loading everyone into the lifeboat, a line may have either been incorrectly fastened or just rotted through. A source does claim that although most of the ship had been refurbished by Winchester and Briggs, the rigging, i.e. the ropes, were all original. As the crew floated out in the small boat, a wind could have caused the rope to become untied or snapped, leaving the captain and crew to drift out and succumb to the elements. Oliver Cobb, a cousin of Briggs, was the biggest proponent of this theory. However, the lack of explosion and the state of the cargo being so good tends to weaken it. New credibility came to light in 2006 when Andrea Sella of University College aired on television a recreation of the possible explosion. Building a copy of the hull and barrels, Sella created an explosion using butane gas. The explosion resulted in a large fireball, but left behind no actual fire damage or soot. No burns, no scorching. So is it possible that an explosion from the gases seeping out of the industrial alcohol caused a fireball, and in a panic to flee a ship they thought was burning, the crew and captain jumped in the lifeboat? Theory 6. Something not of the world or land. Now we have to do the theory that the Mary Celeste was the victim of a sea monster attack. Is it possible that it was set upon by sirens? Deep sea Goliaths? Did Cthulhu take the crew? What about aliens? What if the entire ship was abducted by those of the outer spheres? It would explain why everything appeared suddenly left, why we've never found any sign of them after. God only knows what they may have encountered. Theory number 7, a cursed ship. Our final theory involves the Mary Celeste herself. As I mentioned before, Winchester and Briggs had thrown their own money into her reconstruction because the Mary Celeste had quite a checkered past, and it doesn't even stop at Briggs. The Mary Celeste was built in Spencer's Island in Nova Scotia in 1861, and was originally named the Amazon. Her first captain was a man by the name of Robert McElhenney. Unfortunately, Captain McElhenney would also become the first victim of the Mary Celeste. On her maiden voyage, the captain suddenly fell ill. His condition worsened and they returned to Spencer's Island, where McElhenney would die days later. Captain John Nutting Parker would take over, and during his time would fall prey to several accidents, including colliding with fishing equipment in Maine and sinking a brig in the English Channel after running into it. In 1863, Captain William Thompson took over and remained in command until 1867. Surprisingly, the Amazon had a pretty quiet run under Thompson's hand. No accidents, no strange deaths. That was, of course, until October 1867, when she was driven ashore in a storm and so badly damaged she was left abandoned. However, in October, Alexander McBean purchased her shattered remains to sell to a local businessman, who would then sell it to Robert Haynes in 1868. Haynes bought the ship for $1,750 and spent $8,825 restoring her. He then declared himself captain and had her registered in New York under a new name, the Mary Celeste. However, Haynes wasn't the best at paying bills, and in October 1869, his creditors seized the ship and sold it to a James H. Winchester. Costing a whopping $10,000 in repairs, the Mary Celeste was returned to her former glory and even improved upon in size. The cost of these repairs would be split between Winchester, Briggs, and an unnamed third party, who all took shares in the ship. Winchester, who owned the most, would be declared the owner, while Briggs took the position of captain. One captain dead, one plagued by accidents, one captain run aground, one put in serious debt, and one who disappeared with his entire crew and his family. Some might say that's a coincidence. Others might say that's a curse. Unfortunately, following the trial and the salacious stories in the newspapers, the ship was looked down on. She was sold from owner to owner. In February 1879, in the island of St. Helena, another captain by the name of Edgar Tuthill would die suddenly while in her command. In November 1884, she was wrecked in an insurance fraud scam. The crew responsible for the insurance scam would be taken to court, where they were forced to repay all the money they had received. The trial would add more bodies to the Mary Celeste, as the captain would die in poverty not 3 months later, one of his crewmen went mad, and another committed suicide following the trial. Claims began being made that the ship was haunted or cursed. In a quote from the author of the book The Mystery of the Ship Mary Celeste, Paul Beggs said, quote, "If the court of man could not punish these men, the curse that had deviled the ship since her first skipper, Robert McClellan, had died on her maiden voyage, could reach beyond the vessel's watery grave and exact its own terrible retribution. The mystery of the Mary Celeste would go on to spark several stories and false narratives. The most well-known of these is by the very famous Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, best known for his Sherlock Holmes book. He wrote a story for Cornhill Magazine in January 1884 in which he named the ship the Marie Celeste. The captain became J.W. Tibbs, and instead of cargo, the ship hauled passengers. In the story, a fanatic incites the passengers to murder Tibbs, but ends up killing the whole crew, except for a sailor named J. Habakkuk, who is spared because he holds a sacred amulet. The story, while fiction, actually became the basis for many retellings of the Mary Celeste, and several details have intermingled in the truth. Several magazines over the years also published supposed survivor accounts, the only problem being that the names of the crew were well known, and none of these men coming forward claiming to be survivors are recognized. Other sources have come forward with claims that the ship was attacked by a giant squid, fallen prey to the Bermuda Triangle, or that the crew was taken to the lost city of Atlantis. It is unlikely we will ever know the truth. We do not know what happened to the crew and the captain. We do not know what happened to Sarah or Sophia, or even poor little Poopoo, who seems to be forgotten in this whole big mess. What is hiding out there in the water? Was it something supernatural or something very natural that seemed otherworldly? What could have scared an experienced ship so badly they left with nothing? What could have taken them? Sadly, it seems, we will never know. Well, that's all for this episode. So, what do you think? Which theory is most plausible for you? Do you think the Mary Celeste was truly cursed? What would you have done if you were on the ship? Let us know what you think on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and leave a review. The OtterPod is also on TikTok. Come follow us there. Have a suggestion for a show? Send me an email at theotterpod@gmail.com with your request, and whether you'd like me to mention your name, your alias, or nothing at all. Remember, this is the Otter Side, so give me something cool, creepy, or confusing to deep dive for you. If you like the show, leave us a review. They really help. Poor little Poo-Poo. He really gets forgotten in this whole thing. The Otter Podcast posts every other Thursday. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time on the Otter Side.